Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock. Joining me today, what do you know? It's a recurring guest and Hall of Famer for the FSWA, Ian Osaris. Great to have you here.
Thanks for having me, award-winning podcaster.
Oh my gosh. You won that last year, right?
All right, so here we are.
Yeah. But we're going to talk more about
two award winners. Look at us.
Look at us. I'm excited because like this was the first week of really getting new things. And I obviously there are a lot of people on Twitter who will say, look, guys, it's spring training stuff. We can't really do this. There's too much hoopla about spring numbers, X, Y, and Z. The way I see it is, you know, we're seeing new information and there's a lot of information we can just completely ignore. You know, I'm seeing things like, oh, yeah, two innings of no walks. This guy's cured his control rate or something like that. The fun of it is sifting through and actually finding extremes. And mostly it's on the good side. We don't really, I think, you can correct me if I'm wrong, don't look at the bad side that much. But if there are brand new skills that might be coming to light, that can be very valuable information. So we're going to jump into that a lot today. And yeah, what has really stuck out for you so far this spring training, you know?
One thing it's interesting to me is you get the starters, you know, going first, the guys who are going to go be in the starting rotation and, you know, they get the first two innings and then, you know, you're tempted to just like, I got one eye on Yamamoto's debut right now.
Oh, I know. I wasn't going to do that to you. Okay.
and then you get, you know, the minor leaguers that are trying to make the team or are the six and seven starters. They often come in right after. And so I've been tempted always to like watch the first two innings and then jump to like some other game and watch, especially since the hitters start cycling out and you start being like, I don't know who this is. you're tempted to leave. In the Yankees game the other day, it started with Clark Schmidt, and I needed to watch Clark Schmidt.
Right.
And, you know, one of the things that's interesting to me is that the stuff model is like pretty positive about Clark Schmidt, but I've talked to him about this long term. It's just like, what does he do against lefties? We've talked about this. It's like, what is the plan against lefties? Is he going to do anything? I kind of think he should maybe just try 50-50 cutter curve or something he's never tried. Just lean into his best pitches and just not throw the other ones. But he feels like he needs to throw sweepers to lefties. He gave up 750 slugging to lefties on the sweeper.
He's trying to do the backdoor sweeper. It can work, but then it's really easy. If they know off-speed, batters can push the other way pretty easily or even just wrap around.
The problem with the sweeper opposite hand is you just see it.
You really do.
Coming out and you see it coming for so long and just like, right. I see what's happening here. Mm-hmm. So I was watching him for what he did against lefties. And one thing I would like is maybe elevate the two seamer more. What he could do is maybe elevate the two seamer and go two seamer cutter at the top of the zone.
We got some balloons. Apparently making a peace sign has balloons appear on Eno's screen.
But if he went two-seamer cutter at the top of the zone, he could play the banana shape at the top, right? Mm-hmm. It's hard, but you don't know which way it's going, right?
Right.
And then curve off of that down, right?
Mm-hmm.
That could work against lefties. All those locations and pitches have been shown to work against lefties. I'm not sure he has much command of pitches up.
Sure.
Like you think about it, he's a sinker slider guy, right?
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's just more comfortable down in the zone.
Reminds me of Lance McCullers there. I remember having a whole thing about every pitch would be in the same location down and away. Down and glove side.
If you've trained your whole life to do one thing, like it's kind of hard to be like, and now throw it higher in the zone.
Yeah, exactly.
And so I just, I was looking at his two-seamer locations, and even when he looked like he was trying to get it higher in the zone, it was kind of like middle-ish, not really high. So I wonder if that's what's keeping him back. Anyway, that was what I started with, but I got a treat because I stayed on the cast. Will Warren, my man.
Yeah, that's right.
And Will Warren, there are five pitchers last year who had 98 location plus or better and 110 stuff plus or better in AAA and hit certain benchmarks. And those pitchers are like Edward Cabrera, Grayson Rodriguez. I don't know. It's like all these like rehabbing major leaguers. Mm-hmm. And then the two actual minor leaguers were Will Warren and Jared Jones.
Ah, and there
so,
you go.
you know, these are pictures I like theoretically, but have not. I've seen some highlights, but I haven't like watched him sort of go through a game.
Sure.
And the thing that occurred to me about Will Warren is that it is the same package as Clark Schmidt, and it is the same package as Michael right. King. But what is the difference between Michael King and Clark Schmidt? And to me, it's just a passable four seam, because Michael King's four seam is not his strength. He's a sinker sweeper guy.
Yeah,
but he has a passable four seam, and his changeup is just better than Carson Smith's.
I mean, that's the thing I'm really looking for from Michael King a bit, is just like, can you get that more consistently against lefties?
Yeah,
and Clark Schmidt can't really rely on that.
Yeah, and so I was watching that. I would say that it's really hard for me to like watch two or three changeups and be like, bang, done.
Yeah.
so I will say I'm a little agnostic on Will Warren's changeup, but I thought the four-seamer looked good enough.
Nice.
And so what we've got is, I think, more Michael King than Clark Schmidt. And it all just looked a little bit firmer. And I thought, again, because I had just seen Clark Schmidt live so much low, I thought Will Warren looked much more comfortable high in the zone.
Mm.
And, you know, one of the big things is changing movement patterns. We talk about like banana splitting, banana peeling,
right?
That's big. Changing velocity differential, that's big. But high low is something that we maybe don't talk about as enough.
It's no blueprint. That's that's my favorite thing, honestly. And those that can actually live up and then locate down,
right? And that's why, like, even though riding four seamers are not great at the bottom of the zone, like Walker Buehler used to do that really well, because you would kind of you'd see that low pitch and be like, you know, that's a slider, you know,
right,
and instead,
right.
instead it kind of jumps up and gets you a called strike in the zone, whatever it is. So I think up, down, in terms of locating, is something I saw as a positive, from Will Warren.
I will always say, if it's a pitcher going north, south, as opposed to east, west with their attack, if that's what they go with, generally that's better in my view than east, west.
Well, they have more real estate, I guess.
You do. You have generally lower walk rates, I think, because it's easier to make adjustments north-south than it is east-west. And of course, now Eno has made me turn on this.
No, that makes sense, actually. Yeah. I want to tease that out a little bit, McKenna.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I'm working with my kid, on pitching.
Yeah.
And north-south is like...
Think of the arm action.
It's like an effort, almost an effort, or like a... It's like almost moving your arm up or down.
Yes, exactly. You know, it's much more of your focus of how you're reaching out.
Yeah, but left right is a little bit more about how long you're holding the ball.
And 100%. Yep.
You hold the ball longer.
The extension, as you mentioned with, what was that, Mitch Keller, you were saying? The extension side, or who was that?
Hunter Brown.
Hunter Brown
was having troubles to his extension side as he got fatigued. He said he got fatigued and he got a trouble to the extension side. And that's weird because Hunter Brown is a guy who can spin it and has spun it his whole life and has like three good breaking balls.
Right.
But even he loses that sort of, it's like, because pitching is spatiotemporal, like it's of a place and a time. And so, and I think up down is a little bit more sort of spatial.
Yeah.
And left right is a little bit more spatiotemporal, where like I hold. And so my cues to my kid when he's like missing arm side, I'm like, hold on to a little bit longer. And guess what he does the next one? Right into the dirt, like, you know, to my right, you know, as a catcher, you know. And I'm like, okay, hold on to it a little bit less.
I'll be honest with you. I would much rather that, because at least he's calibrating. You know,
instead
of doing the same thing over and over again.
I'm like, just hone it down a little bit.
Right,
like, left and right. Okay, in the middle of those two. But like, that's something I say a lot to him, is find your release point. And, you know, I think it's often, it's a feel thing. It's a, it's a like mindset. I don't know if the right word. It's just like you're like, I'm like, okay, we do some cues for a little bit. And I'm like, okay, forget everything I just said. Don't have any cues in your head and throw it hard at me.
Yeah.
And sometimes after we do a little bit of cue work and he's just like, okay, I'm going to forget all that. I'm going to throw hard now. He finds it again. So we found that the cue that works the best for him is throw it hard at dad.
There you go. That's good. Well, I mean, but this is actually, when I was growing up, there were a couple cues like that, which is you want to throw through the glove. You don't want to throw through the glove. You want to reach out with your glove, your physical glove, as much as you can, and then pull your chest to the glove, or the glove to your chest on release. That was another one I remember hearing. But there was a lot of just, you know, we would draw a line on the mound to make sure that we're striding directly toward the plate.
Actually, that's a cue that works for him, because I don't know why he likes Kershaw. He's like a Padres and Giants fan. But like, I guess Kershaw is just so great. He's like tried to add. Yeah.
I'm wearing my Tatiaga shirt right now. He didn't even know.
He's tried to add like it's not a, you know how Kershaw like puts his foot out and then he goes further. It's like almost a hitch, but he like has a sort of half step and then he goes further.
Yeah.
He's like, for my son, that was really just a way for him to be like, I'm going to go further down the mound. I'm going to have more stride. I'm going to have more extension. And that added some velo. So in any case, you know, left to right is, I think, tough. But just having somebody be able to be comfortable up makes me feel like, you know, I felt pretty good about Will Warren after the end of that.
Yeah, I mean, especially for I need to watch that one. I had an incredibly busy day yesterday, so I'm still waiting. Like, after this, essentially, is when I really do my review of yesterday's games. Mm-hmm. And correct me if I'm wrong, Will Warren is another changeup first guy, like kind of like Drew Thorpe, but changeup is like, hey, cool, this is the thing I really like, but also having, I believe, a breaking ball. Am I wrong on that one? I could be confusing.
No, I mean, I think it's the Michael King package. It's the sweeper, cutter, sinker.
Did you see it? Did you catch a changeup yesterday while watching it?
I think he threw a couple. His changeup, Stuff Plus likes it, so I think it's pretty good. But he didn't throw as many. I just remember seeing the sweeper, the gyro slider, and the fastballs, and thinking he was comfortable up and down. So
I bring that up for a reason, because I remember actually one of our earlier episodes I thought was really interesting that you brought up, which is you'll often find guys with high IVB or high vert. It's because they have more of an overtop delivery, which is they are more north-south. And those don't, that kind of release, that arm angle doesn't speak to a sweeper as much, because you have to supinate so much, right? You need to open up, you ensure the back of your hand as you release, as opposed to your thumb going down. And that means, you know, it's just kind of hard, a different arm angle. Remember Bryce Miller having a big problem with it, but Nick Pivetta, not so much for some reason. And so seeing the package of Michael King and Clark Schmidt and Will Warren being sweeper focused, it generally does speak more to east-west. It means that you're coming around a little bit more, which makes it harder to change eye level, right? Because of just how your arm is coming across.
Right.
And it's why those that have these really low arm
like
angles.
Last night I was like, high,
yeah, that's
high up, and he lives up and down.
Like, exactly, it's easier to do that because that's just more of your arm path.
And that's what they did with him at the Rays. Was like, stop thinking about left to right.
Right,
exactly. You're never gonna get that right. You're just be
100% up and down. So the one element that's really annoying about all of this is that height adjusted VAA is all about, yo, you are low. But the thing is, if you're low, you generally are more on the side as opposed to over the top. And that's harder to be consistently high with. So those that can do that excel. And that's great. But I see someone like Tanner Scott or something like that. He's just so low. And then he just can't really consistently elevate. Like, his big thing as a reliever was to, he finally threw more strikes, but it was just kind of over the plate and wasn't really up. And I think like Yusei Kikuchi, I'm like, oh, this is why he kind of struggles getting his four seamer upstairs.
Because he's a sideways guy?
Yeah, he's more of a lower arm angle, making it has that great VA, but then it's just like, right, it's harder to then get that location upstairs. I always actually struggled with it. I was a slinger long period, and I was east-west because of that.
There's another way to get good VAA and good-ish ride from a sideways angle, which I hadn't thought of until Trevor May said it recently on our pod. Seam shifted wake.
Sure. Yeah.
The seams on a sweeper keep the ball from dropping. It's a riding slider.
Yeah.
You know? So seam shifted wake, the seams gather in a place, and where they gather, the ball is pulled in that direction. And so a lot of changeups have seam shifted wake on the bottom, which pulls them down. And a lot of and sweepers have seam shifted wake actually on the top.
Yeah, right.
And that keeps them from dropping and keeps it kind of like a sideways slider frisbee. And if you had those seams on the top and basically threw a sinker from this angle, but the seams were on top, you'd have Josh Hader's fastball.
Right.
Which in some places called a sinker, some places called a four seam.
This is what drives us nuts, right? Like Andrew Heaney does this, and Sean Manaea, I think, too, did this. And like, we're like, what is this pitch? Okay, fastball.
But think of also all the guys you just mentioned.
Yeah.
Inconsistent fastball command.
Right. Slingers.
Home run issues.
Yeah.
So is there some aspect of, is it the mechanics that's leading to that? Or is it the seam shifted wake? Because seam shifted wake is something like Alex Cobb and a bunch of other guys are telling me, it's pretty finicky.
Yeah.
It's, even Clay Holmes is like, I have like eight cues. When my seam shifted wake is not catching, I have like, you know, different things I can think about and different lays, little micro adjustments I can make.
Yeah.
Which means that somebody who throws basically the seam shifted wake sinker in the big leagues, the like ideal, the platonic ideal seam shifted wake, way high arm slot, way drop, crazy, you know, everything is this, it's a stuff plus pitch. Clay Holmes's seam shifted wake sinker is telling you it doesn't always catch.
Yeah.
And so if you're depending on something that doesn't always catch, you know, I think that's a part of your splitter discussion. It's like,
yeah, that's very fair, very volatile with it. Yeah.
He's sort of catch a seam and he's a catch in the right way.
Right.
And it's really hard to sort of replicate the thing over and over. One of the reasons I think we got into the whole four seam slider thing is that the spin on those is consistent. Very predictable, consistent, and goes right into our models and spits out exactly what we expect. The correlations, the number of pitches you need for stuff plus to work, the correlations to future success are the highest on four seamers and sliders. The league went to four seamers and sliders. Like, we can measure this. We know.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, the forefront of this was the Dodgers and Yankees and, you know, then the Mariners and the Astros. Like that's a sort of foursome that was really pushing the envelope. I think the Twins were in there, but people didn't realize.
They throw in sticky stuff in there too.
There's some sticky stuff situation there too. But, you know, you had like this really replicable thing, and the Yankees graduated a whole group of people that was kind of sweeper. They graduated a whole bunch of people that was over the top, riding fastball, power slider. You know, that was like the first wave. That's like the Severino types, you know. And then this newest wave is the Michael King, Hayden Wesnensky, Clark Schmidt and Will Warren crew.
Right.
Who are, you know, more sidey, not over the top as much, sideways. They're using seam shifted wake in their pitches. That's that was like the second or third wave of research, you know, that came out of Hawkeye and stuff. And I mean, what's interesting to me is just that, like, no matter what package you kind of throw at your minor leaguers or, you know, you put in your player development mix, some are going to work and some aren't.
Oh, yeah. Well, right.
There's no like, oh, we're all throwing like the Mariners are like, we're all throwing sweepers and they all get to the big leagues and only one of them's throwing a sweeper.
Right. Right. I mean, it's always that, you know, but going back to the whole question of like, is that why a lot of these guys have, you know, more inconsistencies? I would, this is a really compelling argument you're making about it. I've always really considered that throwing crossbody, again, as we're talking about with timing and everything, it's just, it's harder.
I mean, it'd be all these guys we mentioned as crossbody too.
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing, right? It's, I've treated it as a knock. And, I think one of the bigger lessons I had actually was watching, when did Noah Syndergaard debut? 2015 or so? Maybe it was even 2014. I feel like it was 15. But when he first came up, I remember being enamored because of how everything was felt straight. And it felt that every pitch he was throwing was so around the zone and effective because of his mechanics going straight to it. And it was just,
he actually,
there it is. Okay.
His best foot forward, especially, it was very obvious at the end of his career, was he actually had really good command.
And and so that was like the,
when he was 99, it was like great command and great stuff. And then when it was 94, it all fell.
He was actually old 99. But it was, you know, it was one of those things for me. It's like, cool, when a prospect comes up now, I'm actually going to be realizing like, oh, right, that's clearly the quality that I'm looking for, is being able to, how straight are you with this, with his mechanics, and how wide are you, right? And we've seen, you know, I mean, we're talking about the Kyle Harrison discussion, but like Nick Lodolo in there too. Andrew Abbott, not really the best command guy, I would say, at the moment. There are a lot of these. It's more lefty, I think, when it comes to sidewindy, lower arm angle. But I mean, it took a while for Freddy Peralta, and I'm still a little weirded out by him with that. Now, Will Warren, I remember seeing video. I mean, I did that top 100 thing, of course, like every college course you take, you're lucky if you remember 5% of it. So, Will Warren, I want to say it wasn't, from the video I saw, it wasn't as extreme as I've seen of like a righty slinger, like a kind of like a Brady Singer slinger. Okay. Brady Slinger. Let's just call him that from movie. But like the reason I asked about changeup is that if you are more over the top, you're actually more capable of just throwing one. Generally, because if you get on the side of a changeup, you get more of the side movement as opposed to the depth. And from my experience, the vertical drop changeups generally more effective than the horizontal ones, just because, I mean, I'm sure data will, I will go where the data lies. But my instinct is you have a velocity gap, and when guys are trying to catch up, you can just push out your arm to slow it down, and kind of you're giving yourself more time when it's moving away. But if it's down, it's further. It's a harder thing to go and get when you're beat. That's just kind of my instinct with that.
So crossbody is you're pitching across your front leg.
Right. So, or even just like having the lower arm angle where your arm travels from past your shoulder.
Uh-huh.
Think Pat, from like shoulder to shoulder. Think of it that way. Like, what is your full arm travel? Is it more of like a 1 o'clock to 7 o'clock in that way? Is it more of a 3 o'clock to 9 o'clock, right? From shoulder to shoulder. Right. So like, as you go down, like you're making a diagonal down, right? I see. Yeah. But some guys come across and they go across their chest, you know?
So Will Warren is like 2 o'clock.
Okay. So he is somewhat low.
He's like, yeah, I'm like,
that's probably why like Michael King is like that. I think Clark Schmidt's like that. That's why probably the Yankees are like, hey, cool. Because of that, we're going to go into the sinker.
Yeah.
Sinker stuff. Yeah.
He's 2 o'clock, but he doesn't land super closed.
Mm-hmm. Okay. That's right. Straight with his. So he's not doing
it. Is pointing at the plate. And his drive leg is parallel with it. So there's he's not sort of jumping over it.
Yeah.
And he's a lower slot. Yeah. He's like a 2 o'clock. Watching for high in the zone and and firmness and not having everything just sort of,
bleh, like, there's a takeaway, guys.
Yeah. Will Warren, not that.
By the way, I should mention right now, obviously, you know, had me turn on the Dodgers game. Duh, I'm not going to let him watch Yamamoto, not me. And then I realized quickly, he didn't want to watch Yamamoto. He wanted to watch Cody Bradford.
Cody Bradford pitching well.
You know, he
not as well as Yamamoto with the 3 strikeouts. Yeah.
What was that last one? I couldn't tell if it was a cutter down in it or a splitter. I hate terrible camera angles. Anyway, he got some whiffs in there. I didn't like his fastball for one I just looked at, by the way. Oh. I don't know. I didn't love it. It's like, I think this is the whole thing with the Dodgers that we've been talking about every so often. Actually, you know what? I want to go into this with you a little bit, and we're going to talk about it after this break. So I remember sending you a text about Bobby Miller, and it was me just kind of looking at his approach last year and be like, oh man, this four-seamer is amazing. And what's his heat map of like more likely and less likely? That's, we do it by percentiles based on everyone else of all four seamers. It's not like he doesn't throw it upstairs, but he's much more about down and glove side. And I kind of found this trend among the Dodgers. I would even say Walker Buehler, look back at previous years with him. His four seamer in 2021 with sticky stuff was unreal. One of the greatest shapes and I mean, a lot of four seamers were at that time, but like, I mean, this was stupid. Like
super firm, super velo.
Incredible.
Super spin,
extension was great, you know, all of it. He didn't throw it super high off. Like, is made to be just Bailey Oberizzi type, right?
Yeah, He threw it. That's why I was using my example earlier. He throws it right. Down.
But even that, I was just like, dude, I don't want that. I want you to just there, and then Blake Snell blueprint it, and that's the tunnel for your secondary stuff down. And then every so often, when you see that they're not doing it, then you can pin one. But like, again, it should still be less, a lower percentile, not like average or above with the pitch like that, right? And Bobby Miller kind of doing the same thing.
Bobby Miller likes to throw it low and away.
Yeah. And I think like this is the Ryan Pepiot thing. And actually today, Ryan Pepiot, the main thing I wanted to focus on was, is Pepiot throwing high lock upstairs?
No, he was throwing down. I watched
it. No, his four seamers were
upstairs. His four seamer. Yeah. His breakers were down. Yeah.
That's exactly what we want. That's the Blake Snell blueprint, right? You want four seamers upstairs or slow stuff down. And that was not what Pepiot was doing last year. You can also argue that like Pepiot didn't have the best four seamer command.
That's one thing that I came away with today. I definitely watched him today. And I was like,
I'm not in disagreement with you. I watched some of it and I was like, I actually was surprised afterward to see all the data being like, it's collectively in the top third and higher, but it didn't feel, you know, I say this all the time, watch a guy and get a subconscious feeling of like, is this guy doing generally what he wants to do? And does he feel like in control and like orchestrating?
Like he can kind of get it generally up or down, and that's about it.
Right. But it's like I can tell internally how bored I am. It doesn't matter if it's Joe Boyle. I was so bored watching Joe Boyle.
Because
it's just, I don't know where it's going. Like there's no game plan. For me, the fun of baseball is like you're going to execute this and you're going to do that. Like, oh, you do this thing. Oh, that's beautiful. You did that.
Like curvy,
that's why I love, you know, that guy that I refuse to do it every single podcast. I need to have one where I don't say his name. So I get bored with that. And yeah, Pepe wasn't that. And I'm like, oh, okay. But I do like the emphasis upstairs. Spring training early. Regardless.
Is Bobby Miller afraid to throw it high and tight?
I think it's a Dodgers thing.
Huh.
And which is really weird because it's Glasnow there, but honestly, Glasnow, they're just like, whatever. You can't really.
He throws it high in a way, some.
Glasnow doesn't have a lot of high lock because he just has bad command. He just.
Yeah.
He has good enough control with it, but like he can't actually consistently. He's
basically targeting middle
right.
High every time.
So his high lock is like not close to 50%. It's pretty hilarious to me.
Bobby's is probably not either.
So the only guy on the Dodgers that actually does it is Emmett Sheehan, which I dig. So I think it's weird because like I don't really think of him as a great control guy.
He doesn't
guy.
Have good command either.
but the thing is, there's a difference to me of like he is actually getting it upstairs though. It isn't like middle shotgun blast.
We should be able to take this. Highlock is doing this to some extent, but
yeah,
we should be able to take locations
right
and be like
these are ideally in the
just be like, you know? What's his location plus high?
And right. Oh, we do low. That with percentiles and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, so you have
it on our site. All every pitch has I divided them up into nine different ones. I'm actually going to have
I think nine holes
glove side.
I mean, I know people train to nine holes, and nine holes is like how we. But I think it's almost too much. I think
I agree with you. It is. It's just like generalized up and down. I do those, and then I actually am going to have down and glove side as like a not in the zone, just out, like just making it a expansion.
Taking in the shadow zone too. So it's
even out of the zone completely wasted or whatever. I mean, you could probably, what I would ideally want to do is just, I want to create your own like non-competitive rate and then subtract it from a lot of these.
Yeah. So pull out non-competitive. Like you could basically do shadow and chase, you know,
right.
Like
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Shadow chase. And then also the bottom left corner in the zone too. And my point is that, you know, I love that down and glove side. That sounds so cool. And then you can say like up and inside, like I think that's such a good skill for four seamers. And you can find like who actually does that effectively.
So you could then say like Bobby Miller's like down and away location plus or down and away.
Right. Exactly.
Ability is this, but for some reason.
But yeah, so he doesn't do it.
Maybe his high and in location is good, but he doesn't do it enough. Like there's gotta be a way to have a rate stat. You know,
100%. So we'll look into all that fun stuff. But anyway, I think the Dodgers as a whole don't do this, and it drives me up the wall. That's a whole other tangent. Mm-hmm. But because of course how we do this podcast, that was Will Warren. Obviously take a note of him. Chase Hampton, I believe is the other one. I always get his name wrong, so I'm always terrified when I say his name now because I used to say it wrong, but I think it's Chase Hampton with the Yankees or Chance. No, see, this is what I do. Chase Hamilton. See, it's something like that. There's a C, there's an E, there's an H and an N. Okay.
It's Chase.
Okay. He better have a good wave rate then. So yeah, those are the two guys I think with the Yankees. I do want to mention Luis Hill really quickly. Also inside that mix, his four seamer shape is just insane.
Luis Hill.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's more of the Severino type.
Yeah. And I like that more.
High four seam. power slider off of it.
But his four-seamer is legit. It's just I don't trust his rotations. Yeah. Yeah, he's not quite there yet. But that, to me, is way more appealing from the fantasy side, personally. I think for the baseball side, though, it does, like, it breeds effective number three, number four starters, is the sinker sweeper stuff.
Oh, and what's interesting about that is that, like, it also breeds, like, a bunch of players. And I wonder if this is on purpose. Like, think about player development. Part of it is to produce players for yourself. Part of it is to produce players that other people want. So what do you do? What do you do if you, like, look at Stuff Plus and you're like, Stuff Plus, maybe it overvalues sweepers because they have this big platoon split, but everybody's building a Stuff Plus model. Why don't I just make everyone, like, throw sweepers? And then they'll look good, and I can change. I can trade.
Get Juan Soto.
The Guardians do this. The Guardians do this, but not with pitching. They do it with shortstops.
What?
They build shortstop after shortstop after shortstop, and they trade them away all the time.
Oh my gosh!
Is Tyler Freeman any good? Is Brian Rocchio any good?
You're making up names now. You realize that, right? You're making up names to me. This is
I know they're hitters. Sorry, but they do. I think they do this on purpose. Where they just make shortstops.
That's wild.
They just have everybody like take as many reps as shortstops and look credible at shortstop and put them as a shortstop on on the roster listed as a shortstop.
Trade knew that Francisco Lindor was not a shortstop. I knew it.
Well, when it works out, it's Lindor, and you keep him.
That is a really interesting point of like. I think the intent should be, hey, I want you to be that four seamer slider focus. Because honestly, when I think of the best pitchers in baseball, Spencer Strider, Gerrit Cole, right there, done. Wheeler, it's like this is the best thing to do. The best pitch in baseball is an overpowering four seamer, not a sinker. And the best version of a slider that if it can have one that you can throw strikes with a ton, it's a gyro one to me, not a sweeper. But it's not for everyone. And not everyone's able to get enough velocity on it. Not everyone's allowed to. Are able to just locate it well and get enough movement. So
four seamers are Cole, Gallen, Wheeler, Castillo,
Pablo Lopez.
Kevin Gausman's up there. Freddie Peralta.
That's what obviously, but it's the location and consistency of him. Anyway, I understand shifting over to sinker sweeper when that doesn't work. Like if you are a sinker focused guy, you have a bad four seamer, it makes sense. It is kind of funny to me how like you have a good weapon in a sinker to right-handers, and we always pair it with another good weapon against right-handers.
Yeah, right. Dude, it's like the reliever package, right?
Yeah.
Plus is amazing. You can kill right-handers. What's the plan against lefties?
Obviously it's because more so the arm angle that if you would have a good sinker, that means you'd likely also have a good sweeper for that reason. I'm going to move away from Luis Hill though. That's more of a control thing. I thought that was just very interesting. I wanted to focus on that. There's so many I could talk about. Okay. I want to talk about the Nationals really quickly. Because there are two guys to me that are the only ones that I would really consider. I mean, DJ Hers, I don't think I've seen yet. But this is not a Patrick Corbin thing. This is not a Jake Irvin thing. This is not a Trevor Williams thing. Come on. This is a Mackenzie Gore and Josiah Gray. And I think Josiah Gray is a quicker one. He went 2 innings and 5 strikeouts. I tried as hard as I could to find something actually tangible about Josiah Gray. And all I got was Martinez saying, we're just really happy that he was attacking batters in the zone with it. He didn't really nibble as much. He just attacked them in the heart of the plate with his fastball. We realized in previous years that his fastball hasn't really been a major part of his arsenal recently. And we feel like we need to get that, involved more. And it's really good to see that.
But it's not a good fastball.
And then that's my takeaway. I'm like, what are you talking about? But why is that the focus? It's not about throwing strikes with it. Is that he saw it wasn't good, so he didn't throw strikes with it. Now you're just like, well, we should throw strikes with it. Like, tell me that he changed something with it. And at the very least with Josiah Gray, he's always gotten really low. Actually, this is something I've started to appreciate more, is pitchers who are doing the dip with their back leg have a better angle for their four seamer. What do you know? Yu Darvish. Mm-hmm. And Josiah Gray is famous for it. It's like almost scraping his knee on the mound as he releases. It was always the most interesting part about the four seamer, but everything else wasn't good. And it's just always super hittable. I remember talking to about him like in 2019 or something like that, or 2021, being like, but his home run fastball, like it's gonna be so bad. And that's never really changed. And while the secondaries haven't gotten better, but I see that. I see two innings, five strikeouts. It's like, look, I don't know. I just want to get more data on it. And I wanted to at least give you an opportunity to say, like, oh yeah, no, I saw this thing on Josiah Gray, like that he was changing his fastball or something different that might suggest that, because we have no data on it. And it's just a big note for me to check on later.
Yeah, unfortunately, Mackenzie Gore lost a little bit of movement on his fastball, you know, just under an inch. You know, it is an interesting fastball because it's not a sinker and it's not a four seam, but it's not dead zone. It's a pretty good fastball. And it has a lot to do with his release point. So I wonder if it's a little bit finicky, like he needs to have the right movement.
Well, the thing is, though, with Mackenzie Gore, I was really excited about. I mean,
did he throw it higher in the zone?
He did.
Finally. I thought he might do that this year. I really did.
I mean, like, he's got the Nationals don't want him to.
Yes, but he got Sean Doolittle as his new player coach.
Oh, thank you, Sean.
And what is Sean going to talk to him about, dude?
Oh, man. Okay, so I honestly, like, I might be legitimately excited about Mackenzie Gore now.
I don't know how to rank him, though, because it's like, you know, the model is going to spit out what it spits out. And like, you can't, how much do you like let yourself?
Oh, I do all the
dream.
Time.
I mean, you dream.
Well, I mean, it's okay. So is it actually a tangible thing yet? Right. I'm not going to do it yet. I'm going to see, I'm going to monitor this through the spring. I'm going to hopefully get some quote from something somewhere that says like, yeah, I'm going to focus on that now. And I mean, I saw this last year with Mackenzie Gore, the games where he was successful was like, yeah, he actually got the pitch upstairs. And then there was this constant fight, it looked like, of games where it just wasn't all of a sudden that he would sneak it in for a start.
And I think his secondaries
are good.
They're good enough. They're not like plus.
Oh,
like,
yeah. You didn't hear that much excitement, but you're good. Like, okay. All right.
It's like if he's high in the zone with the fastball and they have to like
keep honest. Yeah.
Yeah. If they have to think about high in the zone a lot, that curveball is going to look better lower.
Right.
And I mean, and look, it's just going to be more effective lower. Right. I have him at 101.
I have him actually right around there. I think it was the 90s.
4.79 projection.
You know, what's really funny is I did the Lindy's magazine this year. Incredible honor to do that for starting pitchers. I submitted my 90 and I got the only like thing I got back was where's Alec Manoah and Mackenzie Gore. And I was like, well, Manoah, like, what is going? I'm not actually that close.
Like, but Gore was like 95.
And Gore, you know, Gore was like, I was like, it's right there. But like, I'm not going to make an assumption right now when I'm submitting this thing in February that like he's going to dramatically change his approach.
All the things I want to do.
Like, you know, like, yeah, exactly. Like, I'm not just going to be like, okay, cool. I'm just going to call my guy and be like, okay. I explained that to him. He's like, oh, okay, fine, whatever. And like, now I'm like, oh, man. I should have submitted that one differently, but that's something that I'm absolutely going to be looking into with Mackenzie Gore. I mean, there's obviously things to talk about with like the team context. Is that going to really help him, etc. But what's funny to me, I don't know if you know this, you know, in 2000, I think it was 20, maybe it was 21. I sat down with Trevor Huth, who I absolutely adore, prospect guy for Pitcherlist, and he, you know, it's kind of still like in the midst of the quarantine. So we had this extra time and he put together a video package of like 23, 25 pitching prospects for me. Okay. And this is especially like even I'm still not amazing at prospects and better now. I knew nothing back then. I knew of the name Mackenzie Gore. I didn't know what he looked like. Right. So we sat there where this is on YouTube and we watched all of them back to back. You know, I didn't know who was who. I just kind of like watched an inning or so with him. I gave him my 2 cents. And at the end of that, I said, DL Hall is better than Mackenzie Gore. And that was 2021. And it's been like this joke of like, okay, Nick, you know, whatever.
You were totally wrong. Maybe you were
wrong.
Maybe you're wrong.
And then that was the year he got Tommy John, I think, DL Hall. But then all of a sudden Mackenzie Gore disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it was like, whoa, this is strange. But now, DL Hall and Mackenzie Gore could be good.
Yeah. I'm still bet on this battle here.
Actually could be a battle. And there's someone, of course, obviously keep note on. We don't have any data. We have just video from like, you know, him throwing live BP. Apparently he looked great. you know, but that's a fun one. Who else did you want to bring up that you've seen in spring so far? And actually, you know what? Before we do, we're going to take a quick break to hear Eno's last pitcher.
My next pitcher is one that I have historically not liked. And have not ranked well. And I have him actually right ahead of Jack Flaherty at 100. I mean, right ahead of Mackenzie Gore at 100. It is Jack Flaherty.
Right.
And I, you know, I like the park. The slider is obviously good. But he hasn't, you know, the fastball shape isn't good. And he's really dependent on velo. And you know, I had some stat last year where at 94 plus he was this good, and
it was
like he had another 2 points of ERA.
Start was so fun. The first game for the Orioles was like 95, 96.
Maybe he's just gonna throw harder. All of a sudden, cares, you know,
it was so fun. And then I was like, okay, goodbye.
And then the velo fell off, and so I do my long term prognosis for the Tigers rotation is that the way that room is made for returning guys like Casey Mize and prospects like Jackson Jobe and all these guys that are coming through is that Jack Flaherty will end up in the bullpen.
Right.
But I thought I would take all the pitchers and compare their spring velo to what they did in the past. And, you know, Mitch White pops. They were talking about
him.
Oh,
yeah, he was throwing a little bit harder. I mean, it was more in like a relief role, but it looked like at least it was one inning.
He averaged 96.7.
Yeah.
His max velo was 98 late last year, and he's held that. So, I mean, that makes Mitch White a little bit more interesting. But my favorite, you know, guy there is Bowden Francis, who has a new changeup movement.
Yeah, he's really learning great. The Gosman splitter is what I saw.
And he's also more your over-the-top guy, more good shape on the four-seam, big breaking balls off of it.
Yeah.
Simeon Woods Richardson added velo, which is good because he was about under 90.
Yeah, but it's like 93 now. This is always the interesting question I get is, hey, a guy like, I'm like, oh man, he added like two ticks of velocity, but it's like he was at 91 before. Like, do we care that it's at 93?
Yeah, it might just be moving around in the bad zone.
It could be, but also the way I always have thought about it is once a pitcher establishes a baseline of their success at a velocity, then we can grasp like how it would affect.
Yeah.
So not all velocities are the same once we understand that this is this kind of pitch here.
And which sure, is why, you know, like I think when with Richardson, we don't really have a great grasp of how good he actually is.
Yeah.
With Mitch White and Cole Irvin, other two guys.
Yeah, there's another fun one.
That got big velo boosts.
Yep.
We have a little bit more sense that like, they are fringe where like they're either headed towards the bullpen or out of baseball. Like they're just like quad A-ish. Like they're just, they're just maybe not good enough, maybe good enough. And Mitch so maybe, Gray, you know, you add a tick or two to that and they're like, oh, now you're a fifth starter. That's good. So, you know, interesting enough, there comes Jack Flaherty, 94.6 in his first start after 93.1, an average last year. But I also did movement and he had an inch more ride and that takes him on Savant from 14.5 to 13.4. Now Savant movement is just so hard for me to read. But I do generally think that around 13 is where you start getting into better four seams. Mm-hmm. And so for him to go from more dead zone-y up into like closer, I would guess that's like a 16 IVB, you know, something like that. Maybe 17, not
right.
It's not like a 20 or something. It's not plus.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it's better than it was before. And so the combination of that two puts them on an interesting list. These are all the guys that were up a tick and also up an inch of ride. And this is something that Walker Buehler told me once, that it's hard to increase velo and increase ride because first of all, your pitch has less time, you know, to move. And then he had a personal theory that like sort of the mechanics of throwing that hard, you know, don't always lead to like, you know, converting spin to movement, but also just to great movement. I think maybe it's really hard to throw 100 from certain slots.
You know? Yeah, right.
Sort of was one of his kind of side theories, but You have an inch of ride and a tick of velo. Jack Flaherty's on this list. Joey Wentz, who's moving to the pen, so I don't know if it really matters too much. Plus, he's moving around in dead zone movement. Not that great. Chris Sale, 94.9, also with an inch of ride, and that takes him to the savant movement number 11. And 11 is plus ride. You know, this is from a guy who throws from that slot.
Yeah.
So Chris Sale's fastball looks in mid-career form.
Yeah.
Wanted to throw that out there.
That's
Jorge
great.
Alcala is coming back from injury, and people have forgotten about him. The movement is not amazing, but he was sitting 96.9. I think it might be a bullpen piece for them, but that's a name to remember. Roansy Contreras.
Oh, man, that was my other one.
Was it?
Yeah.
Was it really?
Yeah.
95.2, and he got an inch of ride back.
So, really quick. Yeah, so the big thing about that, there's one data point that I think is really important here that we don't have, and it drives me up the wall, is extension. So he lost extension also 2022.
Whoa, he lost everything because he lost velo, he lost ride, and he lost extension over the first year.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So
lost
it's,
everything.
Yeah, right. So like all the bars just went down. It was as if I sat on them. And I was so excited about this because like I remember actually even doing my top 400 or something. I was like, this is going to come out in a second, but I just got to post this little thing. Hold on. Mm-hmm. And it was just showing the two PLV charts of the 2022 Roansy Contreras four-seamer, which was oddly, like, I didn't realize how good of a shape it was at the time. But
I was super excited about him when I saw that, and then he just didn't keep any of it.
Nope. And then the velocity, the whole thing was just worse with the four-seamer. And this game, I watched it when he gained, the velocity was back and the ride was back. I don't know if the extension is, but I kind of assume it is too. That's got to be part of the whole package, right?
Right.
The slider didn't look as good though. That's like the one element I'm thinking, like, okay, cool. I'm excited that the four seamer is better. You got to command it still. Right. And you also need to have the 25% swing strike rate slider too. I'm much more intrigued by Contreras. I think there's still another gap between him actually being the person we want him to be. But yeah, Contreras is.
Do you think he's headed towards? Fun. He could be a closer.
Believer. Yeah.
If you just look at something like that, where you're like, God, you just really couldn't do it.
I think he does have like the step above the like relief command, right? That would suggest that if he can harness, keep that four seamer and really get some time to really hone the skill of where he wants to put it.
I would love to know if it was like fitness, but I do know that people who have worked with him don't know what it is.
Yeah,
later just like. we'd love for him to keep that shape. We noticed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, there are organizations where they might not have noticed. I told some of those stories, but
on the other side of it,
they were like, yes, we know. And we're working on it, but it's not, it's not that easy.
His teammate also very, very early sign. Very. But I've been banging the drum a lot about Mitch Keller's four-seamer being bad and that he has a really good cutter. And a really good breaking ball or two. And as long as he just leans on going cutters a ton and saves a four-seamer like 10%, 15% of the time as a surprise upstairs pitch or something like that, he could be successful. That's kind of what he did. It was like 38% cutters in that game. And like
that's really interesting. My plan for Mitch Keller was, and it's weird because he doesn't have the command of it, of these people, but to be like a kitchen sink guy. And what I saw late last season, in the second half, he had that 5.5 ERA, was that he really was all hard.
Yeah.
It was fastball, sinker, cutter, and not even that much sweeper.
Right.
So he really became, it was fastball, sinker, cutter, and that was it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's because his natural command is not that great. So he's an unnatural fit for the, like, I throw five pitches and put them wherever I want. He's not that. But he's also not, I throw two pitches and can throw them super hard and will strike you out because the shape is great on both of them. He's not Tyler Glasnow.
Right.
And he's not Hyunjin Ryu.
Yeah, right. Well, he has moments. Like, I saw that. Right. I watched
when he's at his best. Pick. You're like, this is Tyler Glasnow plus Hyunjin Ryu.
Really, it is. It's like that Baltimore Orioles start with 12 strikeouts. I watched every single pitch of that, and it was brilliant.
And he has like, it all looks super hard, super crisp, puts it to where he wants, banana beautiful feeling movement. Everything. Go this way, go that way, go down, go up.
It was so good.
And then the next start, he can't place anything.
Yeah.
And then he has to rely on the fastball, and it's kind of dead zone-y fastball.
Yeah, no, it is. It 100% is. It's not good.
If you want a savant number, it's 15. Yeah. So you don't want 15. 15 no. and 16 movement numbers on savant are dead zone.
Yeah.
And interestingly, Simeon Woods Richardson went from 19 to 18. And I just wondered, you know, like a 20 movement number on savant is actually really weird.
Like, well, yeah, that's a sink. That's a proper sinker then.
Yeah, yeah, like he had a sinker they're calling a four-seamer. There's nobody else here on this four-seam leaderboard that had an 19.6.
Yeah, just to explain, by the way, guys, the how it works on someone, because it'd be very weird. Like, I have no reference point for these vertical numbers.
Yeah.
They essentially take it as zero is if there's no gravity whatsoever. You just throw a strain and it goes there. Mm-hmm. And then, so that means the inches is just how much is dropping. So then if you have low numbers, it's like it's barely dropping. And that's good. That means you're getting the rise, right? The deception.
Right. So you want the lower number. Right? That's why like 11 and 12 and 13.
So you want to see minuses. You want to see less. And, you know, props to Chris Clegg, who I saw him quote some IBB. I was like, how do you get that? Because of, you know, and he was really nice. He shared like a very basic formula. He was pretty much saying like, hey, look, this is a decent one that's quick because we don't, you know, when it comes to IBB, invert like the really specific one has a lot of calculations about.
I'm gonna do Jack Flaherty here on air. Come on,
give me
lot movement times.
Yeah, and then it's so here we go. It's 5-2-3 divided by the pitch's velocity.
5-2-3 divided by 94.6.
Okay, and then you take the square of that number. So it's normally like 5 point something. Square of that.
Wait,
and then
523.
Yes.
Oh, 523
divided by whatever the velocity is, square that, and then you subtract whatever the savant number is. And that gives you like a very loose understanding of it.
Subtract.
So keep in mind that the lower the velocity.
17 IVB.
Okay. That's
so
good.
Jack Flaherty's at 17.
That's good. That's what you want.
Well, that's better than before, for sure.
No, 17. I will take a 17 all day.
Yeah.
17, I'm like, yes, this is
20s
good.
Are elite.
It's so rare to see that to me. And it's like 19 18. These days. I'm like, oh, that's Pavetta and McKenzie. Tristan McKenzie. Oh my gosh. Like Savali will get to like a 17, 18. I'm like, oh. As I see a 16, I'm like, okay, this isn't bad. And 15, I'm like, oh no.
And if you want just like a general one in your head, like, you know, I think anything under 14 is okay. Anything under 12 is elite.
Right. This is the Statcast number, not the calculation we're talking about.
Yeah.
So under 14, like, okay, cool. That's probably it. Unless he throws.
Chris Sale at 11 is like, that's eye opening.
11 is.
Yeah. So.
So there you go, guys. That's a really good, that's a good way for you to understand this. And it's a quick hit of like, okay, are we moving in a good direction at least? Just seeing the minus is good. You want to see the minus. that means he's getting better at that. But
Sonny Gray
is someone I want to bring up there. Yeah.
Sonny Gray, 12.5 savant movement number on his four seam that was also up.
He's
a
cut
bit.
Guy. That's a cutter. I mean like the four seamer to me has always been like a cut four seam.
Yeah. But I mean, right? Hey, then it's cut ride. Like it's better.
Yeah, that's wild. If he's actually keeping that thing up, that's cool.
And he didn't do it with the help of the Cardinals. I wouldn't get it.
I still drives me up the wall of like, I think I heard a quote and this could be wrong. So please take this with a grain of salt, but about the Yankees saying like, well, you get a lot of spin on your four seamer, but at the time it didn't have ride. It just had cut. It was just spinning a lot, but like just because it's spinning doesn't mean it's spinning in the way you want it to spin. So you don't want to throw the cutter upstairs. Then you don't want to throw this cut four seamer. Then that's essentially helping guys, you know, it's dropping to it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's you're right. Like, oh, unless you're going to do the called strike animal, so was it the Cannibal McSanchez, popularized by Colin McHugh and Anibal Sanchez of
which is
high
what?
Cutters for called strikes.
Oh, you throw it above the zone, let it drop.
Yeah,
in.
And then it comes back down. It's like everyone does it on MLB the Show, you know?
That's a little bit, I think, why the high two seamer to the opposite handed players can work.
Yes.
Because you can throw it above and they can drop in for a called strike, or they might even just, you know, they foul it as it comes back to their barrel, but it doesn't lead to like solid contact usually.
Right.
But then again, you have to ask somebody like Clark Schmidt to like throw something they never threw like regularly. Some guys are like Chris Bassett's like, yeah, I can do that. You want me to throw a two seam up there? Sure.
Sure. Whatever. I'm still going to get like a 28% called strike rate. Who cares?
Yeah.
It's interesting. Also last year, don't forget, Chris Bassett was like three ticks down and we were terrified about it. And he had the first terrible start of the year.
Well,
and
that was, I did want to throw those caveats in here. Like these guys are out there for two, like that's why Mitch White is a little bit easier for him to go 9-6-7 for two innings, you know, Cole Irvin 94. And you've said this a lot on Twitter and I agree that sitting versus hitting is really important this time of the year. But what's interesting is that I think early in spring, hitting is more important because it's an easier way to compare to the past. Mm. Sitting is hard to compare when you're like, you just threw two innings. How do I compare?
Oh, I see. You had one showcase of what's in the tank.
But if you hit 98 this year and you didn't hit 98 like June through September last year.
That's a great point.
Then my ears are going to perk up. Yeah. That's like something you didn't do before.
Always understand the context of it because a lot of times you see the hitting is what the average was before and you're like but if you're talking about max and comparing max now to max, that makes sense to me.
And then there are just players that, you know, the reason why it's so hard to just like latch on to these velos, some players are just going to gain it over time. Like I'm looking at the big minuses to where Chris Bassett is hanging out and there's a bunch of just veteran dudes that are probably going to get there. I mean, Luke Weaver is down here. Even Carlos Rodon, they said he's ahead of where he was in bullpen sessions. We're it's happy so about weird. The velo. You know, maybe in bullpen session, maybe everything is fine with him.
I hope
he's
so.
Down. Hunter Harvey is down. That scares me a little bit.
But Ryan Helsley, but the word is that he's just saving bullets, like unlike he did last year.
And maybe that's true for Hunter Harvey too. Like if it's a reliever who's down right now, like, do you care? I mean,
so there's someone else actually I circled right here that I almost forgot about that I do want to mention. Ryan Nelson looks good.
Yeah.
Ryan Nelson. I was actually really impressed with him. I remember this time last year, it was a three-way race in my view between him, Fought, and Dre Jameson. Ryan Nelson got slowed down with the shoulder inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed to me, okay, cool. Like you're in a three-way race and you already have inflammation. You're slowed down. You're not going to win this. But then he did somehow. And it wasn't too impressive because we liked the fastball, but there wasn't really much else to do with it. Mm-hmm. And it was also sitting a little bit lower overall, at like 93, 94 at the end of camp last year. He's already a tick up now.
Yeah.
And his cutter looks good. This is like the pitch that he was saying that he was working on in the minors before he came out back last year.
And he always locates that well.
Right. And it was like an 88 mile per hour cutter at time. Like the first inning was so good from him. And then he was a little bit lower velocity than the second.
And
maybe he was just adrenaline and like, it's okay, cool. I'm going to be a little lower, but I'm kind of intrigued because it's always been like a good shaped fastball, just not quite over that hump of 94. And pairing that with a better cutter that is legitimate. I don't know. That's such an interesting team context to me that I often forget about. The Arizona Diamondbacks is a good team to pitch for. It's a good defense behind them. Good offense now. They win games. Like really helped them Merrill Kelly. Helped Zach Gallen a ton. I think I think it's going to benefit Eduardo a little bit as well. And just like Ryan Nelson is kind of just like, yeah, I've got
and
there's
not really a great option other than him for the fifth starter.
Oh, no, he's doing it. Yeah, it's 100% Ryan Nelson. I can't. Honestly, I really don't know. Is it Christian Mata was the other one or it was something Mena. I'm confusing him and Brian Mata.
And Nelson Ross, like at least can give you like three innings, you know, fastball, cutter, slider. When he's at his best, I think he's mixing those pitches in. He just hasn't been doing that.
Right. Others on my list were Tyler Beattie. Just kidding. He didn't look so bad, by the way. I won't be surprised if like some teams like we don't have a fifth starter. It's like, all right, what the heck? Here's Tyler Beattie. Like the Jose Urania role, you know? And then Hunter Green, quote, his curveball was, quote, iffy. However, he said to the Cincinnati Inquirer that the split was fantastic today. It was unbelievable.
Wait, I think I have a Dunning thing on here.
Dunning was saying he has a mystery pitch.
Dunning is 11.7 savant movement. He gained 4 inches of ride.
What?
4 inches of ride.
What?
If he has a legitimate four seam, like he has a legitimate two seam.
Well, no, he was a slider cutter when he was killing it.
Yeah.
And like the two seamer was like, okay, I'm surviving, I guess.
Yeah.
But like,
but if he had a legitimate four seam to go with that, he would be what? Better.
Oh man.
I mean, I'm just wondering if this is like calibration or something. Like I definitely don't want to go running to this because he had a 45 stuff plus on the four seam last year.
All right. Honestly, if I draft him, I'm 100%
blaming Bing.
I'm going to call my team Cool Dunnings. Without a doubt, I'm doing that. One other guy that's on here for me is Lucas Giolito, sitting 95.
Oh.
That's a big deal. Because I don't think that his four seamer is actually really that great of a pitch, but that makes his changeup that much better. It makes his slider that much better. Again, great team context here of just every 5 days is going to go. There'll be a lot of six innings, you know?
It's a straight change. Like if they need to start earlier to get to that fastball, you'd think that they'd make the changeup more effective.
Yeah. So that is something to keep an eye on. He hasn't been over 93 since 2020 or 21. That was 94. Apparently
he didn't show up in mine because
it's not Statcast. That was a report. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just doing Statcast here, so limited to the Statcast parks.
I know. Why can't Alex Fast do something?
Well, the question is not necessarily if Hawkeye is in those parks. Hawkeye is in every park now,
but they're not providing it.
It's a data sharing thing. The reason that we have AAA Statcast is because at some point the teams just decided let's just share this information. Right. You know, it's just easier than.
So why aren't they doing it in those parks?
Well, because a lot of them, I guess, are minor league parks. Some of them are minor league parks. And I don't know. They just the way that they do it is I think they trade. I think teams trade.
No.
Yeah.
That's what cash considerations is.
No. But they're just like, I'll give you Arizona if you give me Florida.
Is this more like a job fair or is it like the stock exchange?
Well, it becomes a little bit weirder on the college level where you're like, come to colleges and you're like, we would like your Statcast data. And people are like, well, okay, pay for the implementation, like pay for us to put it up.
Yeah, right. That's absolutely unbelievable. Oh my, it's so silly to me. It's just going to be like that regardless. Okay. It's just in due time, it will be there.
Yeah, but I mean, you get first mover advantage on some of the stuff, right?
I know.
If you don't let everybody else see it.
Just let us have our fun.
We have AAA. Now
can I pay for it?
Do you know what they're going to do? What teams are going to do is not send their best prospects to AAA, which they already kind of do anyway. But their best pitching prospects.
Well, right. Yeah, like the Mariners
don't go to AAA because you don't, unless you want them to like look good by stuff plus and trade them.
And right? Yeah, of course, the Yankees will do it all the time.
Yeah.
Maybe we can call them and be like, we'll be consultants for you. Just give us the data. Just give them the data. Yeah. You know, that's obviously there's going to be a lot of things that change over the next week as well. I'm looking forward to I think this might be a good focus for us in the, you know, through spring training, just be like, hey guys, these are the ones that are really interesting to us right now. But is there anyone else that you wanted to add here, Ian, before we go?
Nope. Got to watch some more. I'm going to start this Yamamoto start over again and watch.
I watched all of it. It was fine. You were going for a long time. I'm going to get this hedge of a hair, trimmed a bit before I go off to Florida, which I'm sad you're not going to be there.
Yeah.
What else is on the horizon outside of course, I'll be there on March 20th. I cannot believe. Thank you so much for inviting me onto the Rates and Barrels live pod at the other
March
half.
20, March 21st. 21st.
Mike Petriello too. That's going to be incredible.
We're going to have,
I changed my flight to make sure I can be there. So
we're going to have trivia. We're going to give away some stuff. We're going to have live Q&As.
It's the Williamsburg other half, unfortunately. Okay.
The Domino location.
Yes.
But I don't know. Next week, on Sunday, I go to down to spring training. And, you know, one thing that I want to work on is basically like an oral history of Yu Darvish's pitches.
Yes. This article. Great. Good. I was wondering.
I have like most of his grips and I finally got them. And like, what's interesting about him is he's always listening and he's always like learning from other people. So like, you know, I think his curveball grip is Pierce Johnson's.
Really? Pierce Johnson had a vicious just like a little breaker.
That's like
that was like his like, thing, wasn't it?
Yeah, it's just like a little tidbit. So, that's you know, so just all the different, like he used to have pitches he doesn't have anymore, and just he's the guy with all the pitches. So like, right. You know, this would, I think this would be a fun thing to go through. But yeah, great. I just got a couple other ideas. And so it becomes that great transition for me where I go from like all these preview articles and rankings and stuff. I should have a rankings update soon, maybe by Friday. And you know, all this sort of, preview looking stuff, when I get to spring training, I get to actually talk to players again,
right,
for the first time. So we'll get some different kinds of pieces coming out.
Awesome. I want Darvish just to be like, yo, I throw four and they're really good. I don't want him to be like, I'm going to be like a jack of all trades. I'm like, dude, you
I throw 15 and five of them are not really useful.
You're just so good at these. Like, do that always, you know?
I mean, they're to some extent, when you like watch a Yu Darvish starter, you look at his percentages, it is actually,
well, last year he went to like, three of them. He really leaving, yeah, like sinkers and sliders by the end, and I'm like, but you have one of the best four seamers.
He's just so happy that the sinker moves better in San Diego. So.
Well, right. And that's such a fascinating thing.
Yeah.
But that sounds all great. I'm going to update the list on Monday when I get back from Florida. And then I have my routine draft guide, which, by the way, I have labor on Sunday. I have not done my like actual true hitter research yet. And I'm like, Nick, you're running out of time. Little and put out a whole guide on it. But, you know, it's we've been doing mock drafts.
You're going to be like Albert Pujols.
Well, I have like I've at least made a notepad of like, as I'm doing drafts, I'm like, oh yeah, that guy.
Yeah. You do have a lot of people that work at Pitcher's List.
This is true. Some of them work on it. I mean, honestly, I just go to
like
Scott.
Kyle. Custom auction value.
I mean, really, I could just say like, hey, our PLV projections, who they like, I said, is great. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Listen to that because it's fantastic. But yeah, no, it's just really getting everything solidified for the start of the year. It is pretty wild that it's 30 days. Well, I guess 31.
It's 29 days. Early draft season. I got four drafts going on right now.
Well, I've got TG, FBI. Of course, I got my guy in Eflin, actually. I'm so happy. And everyone's like, oh yeah, right. Why did we let Nick do that? I was like, I don't know.
I'm on the clock in two drafts right now.
Oh my gosh.
Gotta go.
Get out of here. On the behalf of Ian Osiris, my name is Nick Pollock, and we look forward to discussing the craft again next week.